and welcome to the Journal of Southern Religion podcast. My name is Art Remillard, and this is the last podcast that I will be bringing to you. I'm stepping down as podcast director, I'm stepping down as book review editor, and I'm not alone. Mike Pasquet, Luke Harlow, both the editors of the JSR, are stepping aside too. Coming in, we have Doug Thompson from Mercer University and Carolyn DuPont from Eastern Kentucky. She's going to take over my job. Today I have with me Mike Pasquet and I have Doug Thompson, and we're going to talk about this transition and what it's going to mean for the journal in the future, and we're going to take a little bit of time to think about where we've come from. So, Mike, Doug, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Art. Hey, Doug.
Mike, let's just start with you and ask you about where was this when you came in, and what do you think you've brought to it?
Sure. Thanks, Art. So Luke Harlow and I were approached by the previous editor, Randall Stevens and Bland Whitley, to take over, take the reins from their able hands. And they really left us with a good platform to think about ways to, first to explore possibilities for, you know, online academic journals. And we took that really seriously. And a couple of things that we were able to accomplish. First was inviting Lincoln Mullen at Brandeis, a PhD candidate at Brandeis, to really revise and revitalize and reinvent the website and really bring it up to a true 2.0 website. And he's done that just marvelously, and we really can't thank him enough. And he's also been assisted by Matt Cromwell, another graduate student in American religious history. And between the two of them, especially with Lincoln, I think those who've seen the website, jsr.fsu.edu, it really has been overhauled and professionalized in a manner that I think speaks to the future of online publications. And Lincoln's really taken the lead, not just for the journal, but also for online academic journals in the country in how these things are supposed to work. And how do they work well, and what direction is the Journal of Southern Religion taking, but also online journals in general. So we've really been the beneficiaries of his expertise, and he's just a graduate student. It's just wonderful. And we've also had the support of Emily Clark, who's a PhD candidate at Florida State University in the Religious Studies Department. And she's been operating as both the copy editor as well as the managing editor. She's been with the journal for around 4 or 5 years now. And she's going to be the sort of the continuity going forward with the new editorial team. And she brings a lot of skills, both in terms of technical, but also her knowledge and expertise in American religious history and Southern religious history. In terms of the content of the journal, we've, in this last issue, been able to get 4 full-length peer-reviewed articles from really fine scholars and really fine scholarship. And it's something that, to be honest, the journal had difficulty cultivating over the last few years, and that was a goal that Luke and I had going forward: is how to get this interest, how to get other scholars interested in publishing with the Journal of Southern Religion, and really the success of that, getting to the point where we are now, has, you know, I'm not trying to blow smoke up to you, Arthur, but it's really to do with the work of Lincoln, overhauling the platform, and you as this just tireless book review editor and podcast director. It really brought the content of the journal to a wider audience. And with that wider audience, we got more attention from scholars who wanted to have their original research and writing published in the journal. It's a combination of all those things that really has led to the success of the journal, and we're pretty excited about handing this off to what I think are much more capable hands than ours.
Well, I, you know what, you can keep blowing smoke. I don't care. That's fine with me. So, well, let's go over to Doug then and ask him, what do you see as the potential moving forward now?
Thanks, Art. I don't know that, and thanks, Mike, excuse me. I don't know that I would say capable hands, or at least not the ones that are attached to me. But I told Mike in an early conversation that I was at the conference that the journal put on in 1998, and I remember being struck then about the way in which there was an online format and that the field didn't seem to know what to do with it. So it was kind of an interesting idea. But in many ways, the format came the field came to the format, right? So there are a number of print journals that have online presences. There are not in their journal form, but you can get to them that way. But there are also a number of other places where online format work. And so I'm excited because all the work that's been laid down up to this point, I think puts us in a really good position in particular, and this is connected to Mike's comment about UART, in the way that we can do things like book reviews and podcasts and playing with the idea, or actually pulling off the idea, of having a more roll release format so that as book reviews become available, we have the ability to put them onto the website so that scholars can engage in that critical dialogue earlier. It's not that the format for waiting is necessarily bad. It's just that we think that we could move into that conversation much faster if we used a rolling release. And so at the moment, we actually are in conversation with Lincoln, Emily, and Carolyn about how to make the rolling format possible. And so we will walk slowly into 2014 with volume 16 to try and establish a model and a routine for posting book reviews a little faster. And obviously podcasts come quicker. That really is the model at the moment. But also articles. And the other part that Mike left out that I think is an intriguing way for us to move forward are the forums and the author reflections, in which we could take a conversation that is going on at a conference where only a few folks might actually interact with it, and one of the articles might appear somewhere, and we could have that conversation appear online. And so we're in the process of trying to figure a little bit of that out now. The book reviews are probably the place where that will start. But then the larger ambition is to figure out how to get articles and forums up faster. That's kind of the short-term future. We actually have some other kind of longer-term goals that I think are important. The journal has the ability to be interdisciplinary in ways that it currently is, but we could expand that. And I think we could create some editorial positions to bring that about. And so there are a host of other ways that we could expand and build. But again, it's the structure's in place. It's just mostly tweaking here and there.
Let me pick up on this and ask you both this in terms of content, because this is really, at the end of the day, we can have all the flashy websites and everything that we want, but it all comes down to the quality of the content that we put out there. And looking ahead, what do you hope to see submissions looking like, forums looking like, and conversations happening on the site? Like, what kind of topics and themes would you like to see addressed? I'm just going to start over with Mike because he's heading out, and then we'll go over to Doug because he's going to be the one making the decisions.
Yeah, well, I think I can speak to lessons learned and where seeded and where we, I'm comfortable saying failed, in the sense that that given certain limitations, we weren't able to accomplish some of our more far-reaching goals. So first, returning to the previous comment about the online forum and the author's reflections, that was really spearheaded by Luke Harlow at the University of Tennessee, and he's really set a kind of precedent and a kind of system for providing that kind of content to the journal. And it is just about, like Doug said, figuring out a way to encourage more responsive, more quicker responses and more regular participation by those who want to think about religion in the South on the journal. Also, I think one of the limitations that we had was really the logistical support, the institutional support. This was done really almost in somebody's basement, figuratively speaking, with a handful of committed people who were doing this on their extra time, and finding ways to get more people more engaged at the editorial level, getting people from a broader array of disciplines, not just history and religious studies, which is what we've concentrated on, and getting more buy-in from more interested parties. And that really comes down to just, you know, pounding the pavement and getting out there and trying to get the word out and being more proactive, but not just within the core editorial team, but from other interested parties who want to play a more proactive role in the future of the journal.
You know what I'm thinking about is before you stepped in as editor, you did a special issue on Katrina. And that's right. Something that we can do and do well and do quickly. And I think that for me, looking back and then looking forward, that's a good model looking ahead, trying to grab a hold of something that's happening and then contextualize it from all these different perspectives, because that was a wild issue. I mean, we had poetry, we had history, we had some real thick theoretical insights from some of them. So, you know, I think that that's a good model moving forward.
Yeah,
it took a lot of the weight and work off of the table of the full-time editor.
I got to tell you, I was the web guy then, and that was a lot of work.
Sorry about that, buddy.
So no,
the content just poured in, right? And we put a call out, and it was directed. Wasn't just us sitting at our computers waiting for people to turn things in and submit things, and it's a different model.
Yeah, Doug, what do you think?
I was gonna point to the Katrina volume as well, in the sense that one of the things I think we can do in a lot of ways is if you create a structure where someone's not responsible for every single piece that enters in, right? I mean, ultimately one person, in this case it'll be me, is responsible. But the idea that everybody has to sit and wait for things to come in, if you create, I think at some level, a group of folks who are actively looking for and going after pieces, then we could put it together faster. That's one piece or one way to look at it. I'll give an example. I was at the Southern in early November, and I don't know that I would necessarily use this as the model, but there's a panel that Paul Harvey chaired on the use of or the way that prohibition has generally been understood within American religious history. At least all four papers, one with a sociologist, engaged in a way of thinking that largely has escaped the field at some level. And so if you could find, but there were 25 people in the room. If you could find a way to take that kind of content, because I think that was essentially your question, the way the content can then not serve as backdrop to the flash, but actually we can push the content out faster. And what's more important to me is that we actually start engaging in these conversations. The thing that Mike talked about, way in which we would engage in conversation and bring other folks into the fold, so that the sociologist doesn't have to generally just go to a historian's meeting, but actually could come to the journal and see something worth reading, first, and second, a place where they might actually put their scholarship forward as well, and that we end up in conversations with one another. Again, I don't know that that particular panel is the one that I would point to, but you're asking for what kind of themes, and I think that's one of the ways that we can think about this and moving forward. If you had a group of assistant editors who came out of disciplines but were willing or wanted to have this kind of conversation, they could generate content both with each other and within their field, so that I think we could actually not have to worry about having the content all perfect and waiting till October for it to come out, or we actually then just push it when it becomes available. And so the nature of the question that strikes me is that the content actually is the more important thing, not the web space. That just happens to be the format we get people engaged in conversations that are important to us.
Let me kind of pick up on that, because there's like two things that Mike and I have talked about for the longest time, and we just never kind of got to it. And this is the nature of the business, I guess. But we always thought like a special issue, thinking about, you know, the South beyond the South, was something that we really wanted to drive toward, was to look at, you know, there's so many good things coming out right now that are cracking up our sense of what the South is and what Southern religion is. I mean, I just had a couple of podcasts over the summer with somebody like Nora Rose Musnick, who was talking about Arabs and Jews in Kentucky, right?
Right.
And this is like a perfect direction to go at. How can we understand the center and the periphery differently? And, you know, as the South is entering a far more complicated age, you know, can we contextualize this on the JSR in a meaningful way? And to your other point about conversations, you mentioned the 1998 conference. This was another thing Mike and I just talked about, but just never were able to pull off, was more conferences.
I think there's a moment where you sort of go, one more conference. I don't know that I have money for that, but I think there's some interesting models for doing it. And here's why I think this might be important. When religious studies folks get together, they generally end up at places like the American Academy of Religion. When Southern historians or historians who work on the American South, they tend to get together at the Southern. And what's interesting to me is that you could actually have cross conversations if you figured out how to get them all in one room. At the moment, the Center for the Study of American Religion at IUPUI, I think it has that model, and they do it every other year. I don't even know that we have to do it in the off years, but I actually do like the idea of trying to generate a way in which where we get together and have a conference. And in fact, my longer range vision, as I have called it recently, my delusions of grandeur, is that you could actually create conferences that then generate content for us as well. And I have a number of things that I think might work. But this idea of the South beyond the South is obviously one of those places we could have that conversation.
Mike, anything to add?
Yeah, I would say that the Journal of Southern Religion, from my perspective, is a perfect place to explore and experiment in this concept, this definition, perhaps even this interpretive fiction that we call Southern religion.
Right.
Really press the boundaries of this category. You know, it's in the name of the journal, so why not really seriously investigate it? And it wouldn't lead to its destruction. It would lead to a deeper and richer understanding of religion in the South. And one of the ways in which we hinted at and started to move in that direction, I think, was in the forum on religion in the colonial South, which has a lot to do with really rethinking the South in geographic terms, in chronological terms. I'm writing a book on religion in colonial Louisiana, lower Mississippi Valley, and that story and that area and that time period is very uncommonly associated with Southern religion. And I think that deeper in American colonial history, that too is a way to think about the South beyond the South or the South before the South, and there are precedents for this. And that's, we can start in the beginning, and we can start in the now, and then everywhere in between can really, I think, in interesting ways disrupt the traditional narratives that we tell ourselves or that we're given of religion in the South. And I think the JSR is the place to do that.
And I got to say, too, there's a potential to connect this up with bigger, broader themes of American religion and complicating that, too.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of great scholarship coming out about Junipero Serra, the Franciscan missionary in California. And thinking about him as a founding father and shifting our focus west and thinking differently about the narratives of foundation that form there. Every Californian knows this story.
Right.
But people who study the West are saying, hey, we all need to be aware of this because this isn't just a story of New England.
Right.
And I think that the JSR can sort of shift that focus southward and then back outward nationally and, yes, even globally to better understand those currents as well.
Right. I think what's interesting is even the Puritan narrative, whatever it is that then affects us, right, ultimately affects the way we tell the sort of Southern religion story, which is that, you know, you have these evangelicals who move south and then they take over. And while you can plot some of that stuff out, they clearly are far more complicated stories and narratives about the folks who were already in place, right? The colonial story, I think, gets at that. But also, an interesting way to think about this is the post 1965 reform of immigration law, where when immigrants are moving into the United States out of places like Asia, their redistribution into places like Atlanta or Baton Rouge or any other number of places in the American South changes a little bit about, or changes a lot in some ways, what we think about when we say Southern and religion. And I think those are all avenues that we can explore, and more important to me, that the journal become the place where we actually have those conversations sort of outright and engage them. And again, if we can figure out how to generate that content in a way that has us engaged with perhaps multiple conversations throughout the year, even better. So
I think that's a great place to wrap this up. Thank you both, Mike and Doug. Thank you especially for taking this on. It was our hope that we could hand this off to capable hands, and you are indeed a capable-handed person.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike, and thank you, Art.
Thank you also to anybody and everybody who has listened to these podcasts since I've started them. They've been a joy. I'm going to continue doing them over at the Marginalia Review of Books. I'm happy to be joining my old friend Joseph Williams with their Modern Christianity section, so I'll keep on recording away there. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.